wrong song, but what are you going to do? Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome back to Third Stream View for Monday evening, June 6th, 2011. June 6th, D-Day. Big day over there in Europe, 1944. Might touch on that a little bit later. This is your humble host, PK, speaking, and I'm expecting a friend, gentleman I met, called Chad. He's going to call in a little later. And Chad, if you're out there, call the 415 number. Call 530-413-4515. And I believe for our listeners, if anyone wants to call in, they can dial in 530-413-4511. So again, welcome back, everybody. We have an interesting guest coming out. We're going to talk about the cops a lot tonight, the police, not the band, because I prefer those police to the other police, especially since our police across this nation have become very militarized. So we'll be talking about that. And my guest was a policeman. He did things a bit sort of the opposite. He was a policeman first, and then he joined the military. Most cops are usually in the military, and then they join the police force. So we're going to get his take on things and my take on things, and we're going to put the hammer down on some institutions and the cops that deserve it. You know, YouTube is just full of citizens' videos of police just out of control, you know, beating on innocent people or roughing up senior citizens. I mean, these are not the police like they used to be. So we'll be talking about that, which I'm certainly looking forward to. And also, Chad is a member of the Oath Keepers. For those of you who may not know what the Oath Keepers are, they are veterans and or current military and or police or firemen, and they have sworn to uphold their oath to defend the Constitution, which to me, of course, means that if there is any peaceful protests in our country, that these people will not fire on the American people, be they, you know, police or veterans who are now police or National Guard or military. They will not fire on the American people. They will not kill innocent American people who are protesting peacefully. So that's a very important concept. I was also having a little trouble again tonight with my equipment. I don't know why. It worked fine. I tested it about an hour before the show, and it worked fine, and now it's not. So I hope the powers that be aren't dicking around with things. Be that the CIA, FBI, who knows, this whole crowd. But anyway, Chad is with us. Chad, are you out there?
Yes, I am, PK. How you doing?
Good. Welcome to Third Stream View.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Would you like some tea or coffee?
No, I don't need that.
Sorry, it's self-service.
Good deal.
Well, I'm glad that you were up and available at this time slot. I know it's difficult for some people, depending on where they are in the country. But I was glad to have chatted with you a while back and got to know you better and found you quite interesting with a lot of things that you had to say, and you were outspoken, and I like outspokenness because on this show there ain't no censorship and we don't beat around the bush. We try to go right to the meat of the issue and put the hammer down and tell it like it is.
That's good. We need more of that, I think, in this country right now.
Oh, boy. What a mess we're in.
It's terrible. It's terrible.
I know we're mostly going to speak about, well, we're going to speak about geopolitics a bit, but we'll be talking about the cops tonight, too. But something that else scares me is that I hope, I'm not sure, I don't recall if I've heard this or not, so when I'm not sure, I don't clearly state the fact, but I certainly hope, and I'm sure that you do, too, that there is not a QE3 waiting in the wings.
Oh, man. I'm beginning to think. I've been following. One of the things that I do is, to, you know, for money, is to follow the markets. And 2 weeks ago, you actually heard Fed governors and members of the Board of Governors on the Fed publicly saying, oh, we're done after QE2. There's not going to be a QE3. No need. The last few days, since about 4 days in a row now that the market's been headed downhill, you're starting to hear not Fed officials, you're hearing these analysts from Goldman Sachs, from all the usual suspects. Well, QE3 would be very helpful to boost liquidity and all this, you know, all the nomenclature that they use to try to sound like they're smarter than the rest of us. And all they're saying is, hey, guys, we really need you to print more money.
Wow. And I bet
I think if these guys are asking for a PK, it's going to happen, you know?
Paul Krugman's egging them on, I'm sure.
That guy. Give me a break. I can't stand him.
I can't either. And I don't want to dwell on the Wiener incident, but it couldn't happen to a better arrogant weasel.
I thought, you know, when he came out today and he came out with his admission of guilt and that he had lied and been unfaithful and all these things, I was thinking, well, of course he's not going to resign his seat. He's in the perfect place to be a weasel.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He's amongst colleagues and friends.
Well, he's also a rabid Zionist, and he did not attend, I think it was the Israel parade, I think it was today, or whatever day it was recently. He didn't even go to that. So he's really had his head between his legs, and he's hiding out. Wait until this blows over. But he's a very arrogant combative. I mean, I'm combative, but he's combative down the wrong path.
Yeah.
And he's very cheering along Obamacare, or is it O'Romney-care?
O'Romney-care.
I hope that Romney gets
that
nowhere,
too.
Because that bastard, you know, if he can weasel his way out of this deal, you know, this O'Romney-care, as I like to call it, I don't see how he'll ever live this down. And he's flip-flop on so many things. He is like an oily used car salesman, a stuffed shirt kind of guy. That's what he comes across to me.
That's a good analogy. And I think this is the moment of truth, too, for the GOP establishment, you know, because those of us that are libertarians and even those of us that are fairly new libertarians, we came to that awakening that, you know, you're looking at two heads of the same monster when you look at the Democrats and the Republicans. You know, all these people that voted for the hope and change, what have they got? They've got another, now a flat-out illegal war going on in Libya.
Sorry, I'm laughing.
You know, from the Nobel Peace Prize-winning president of the United States. I mean, you've got to be kidding me. So now we've got Romney, who, you know, all the idiots like Sean Hannity are out there talking about, oh, this guy's great, he's got the looks, he's got this, he's got business experience, he's got this. The guy's a venture capitalist. He goes out and he rapes smaller companies, you know, knocks them down, buys them out when they get killed for cheap money, and then boosts him back up. I don't begrudge anybody making a profit, but this guy's a pirate. You know, I mean, that's what he is. He's a pirate.
Well,
you know,
listen, I don't
operating
like
within the bounds of legal financial laws. But I mean, now Romney's what? He's got the O'Romney-care thing he's got to do, and he's got the his quotes on global warming. He's a big global warming guy too. But then again, it's like, you know, he's a Republican from Massachusetts. Give me a break. You show me a conservative Republican from Massachusetts, I'll show you a liberal Democrat or a socialist from anywhere else in the country. You know,
his father was a better man. But I got to take issue with you. You just made a negative comment about Sean Hannity. And Chad, I want you to know that, like most people, I form my opinions based on talk radio and Fox News. I let them do my thinking for me. So please don't pick on those guys.
Okay, I'll make sure that doesn't happen anymore tonight.
Well, I said this about Rand Paul, and I'm saying about Romney, their fathers are better men.
Yes, yes.
You know, I like Rand Paul, but he's, you know, a little wishy-washy. You know, I'm glad he did his filibuster about the the Patriot Act, but apparently recently he said that people who make, you know, terroristic comments should be put in jail or something. He made some comments recently.
Yeah, I was kind of surprised at that.
I didn't hear
the full context of it, but it did surprise me.
Yeah,
very much.
Yeah. Well, I hope he doesn't sell out and water it down more, because you know, I was glad to get him, have him in there. And his partner from Kentucky is awful. Mitch McConnell.
He's terrible. They're all terrible. I mean,
big government,
you know,
Republican.
We've got Ron Paul, we've got Rand Paul, we've got a handful of people in there, you know, that maybe three or four that I can think of that we could actually trust, you know, to do the right thing more often than not.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I mean, look, we look at this so-called Tea Party revolution that we just had, and you could see, and I remember when I ran into you the first time and we were talking, or was it the second time, when we was at one of those rallies, and we were mentioning how the first few, you know, protests that there were, it was local people, it was local, not politicians, but local people, local activists talking about
right. The
economy, talking about the debt, talking about liberty.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, within a few months, it becomes, you know, they have John Boehner speaking at the Tea Party. They have these other, you know, big GOP, you know, clowns speaking at the Tea Party. And it's like, oh, now it's just been co-opted into the GOP and given a semblance of autonomy. And all these guys are professional politicians, and they'll show up and they'll say anything they need to say and do anything they need to do to get you to vote for them at the ballot box. And once they get to D.C., oh, well, we can't do that just yet. It's too radical. It's too extreme. Well, I mean, we're about to fall off a friggin' cliff here. If we don't do something radical and extreme soon, it's going to be too late.
You're right. But I said right away, shortly after all the Tea Party got going, is that, and well, To summarize what you've just said, they've been infiltrated by the neocons. When
exactly.
you have Sarah Palin and Gingrich and Sean Hannity, you know, tooting your horn, they've already sold out. You know, that's, and they're going to support any Republicans, even if it's Romney, supposedly.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing. It's you know, our guy is better than your guy. Anything is better than Obama. Well, really, really. I mean, it's
Obama white.
You know, I mean, people would have said, you know, 4 years ago, oh, anything would be better than George Bush. And 4 years ago, I would have believed him had I not looked at, you know, Barack Obama speaking at the convention in Boston, thinking this guy is going to be president of the United States. They're grooming him, you know.
Yeah. Well, I knew
and,
it'd be,
and it's going to be bad news, because I started reading his books right then, you know, and thinking, yep, this is
the audacity of hope.
Yeah, we're going to have our first Marxist president.
The audacity of Obama. Well, I see him, I don't see him as a Marxist as much. I see him as a strain of socialism, but I see him as the Mussolini corporate fascist type.
Yeah, I, you're
because
right.
Because he's in support of, you know, the auto industry and that sort of thing. He's a corporatist.
You're right. I mean, saying Marxist, I mean, he was, you know, looking at his biography and his family history, I mean, he was raised, you know, raised to be a Marxist, for lack of a better phrase or analogy. But yeah, I mean, what he's morphed into as far as his policy is concerned is definitely this weird combination of socialism and fascism and just all these weird isms that of course belong together, but it's almost like the perfect storm, you know. And I also think he's more of a tool than anything else. I mean,
oh, sure.
I think he's allowed to keep his BlackBerry for a reason, so he can take his calls from George Soros every morning and know what he's got to do today. You know. So.
Well, yeah. Like I like to say, if he'd spent as much time studying free market or Austrian economics as he does watching ESPN, he'd have a clue about the economy.
you'd think after studying the economy for how many years, Paul Krugman would have a clue. But these guys are just. These guys, I mean, it's like how many times can you be wrong? I mean, flat on your face, dead ass wrong, and
well,
you still keep doubling down on stupid. I just don't understand.
I remember when
I started waking up. You know, I was in my late teens. I'd going into my early 20s, and I was just questioning all kinds of things, because I grew up in Massachusetts, the People's Republic of Massachusetts.
Yeah.
And there, if you were not a, you know, Ted Kennedy worshipping, you know, blindly Democrat voting, union loving, you know, plebe, then you were persona non grata. And I kept looking at more and more things going, but it's not working. And you get into discussions with people, and you know, you'd be talking about whatever policy, and then you'd go, "Well, why? Because that's not working. It hasn't been working. Why do you want to push that?" And they do just short circuit. Well, and it was the same talking points back then. Well, you must hate women, or you must hate Jews, or you must hate gays, or you must hate this, or you must hate that. It's like, well, no, I just want to know why you want to keep doing something that doesn't work. Why not try something else? You know, why not let the government get out of the way and let people figure it out for themselves, because they know what they need, you don't.
Well, yeah, it's perpetuated by the politically connected. The politicians get their salaries, and you know,
exactly.
They retire as millionaires, as Obama will, and they write their books.
You know, Obama was groomed by Brzezinski. He's definitely a globalist New World Order person.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, this guy has been... It would be interesting to see if we could actually get all of his, you know, records and transcripts and all that stuff uncovered to find out who his real mentors were. I mean, we know, you know, Frank Marshall Davis, when he was growing up in Hawaii, and Frank Marshall Davis was a big, you know, communist activist in Chicago and then later in Hawaii. But all his college years, I mean, isn't that interesting? I mean, as much as I despise George W. Bush, but, I mean, we knew when that kid got an infraction as a Boy Scout, you know, and this guy, yeah, we don't know a damn thing about him. We know nothing about Barack Obama. And even, was it last year or it was right after the election? I remember watching, was NBC or one of the major networks, and it was a bunch of these three senior newsmen sitting around. It was like Dan Rather, and one of these guys said, well, we don't really know much about him. No, we don't. He's actually kind of an enigma. I think, well is the time to talk about what an enigma
this
guy
enigma?
Is? We don't know anything after you've elected him president of the United States. I mean, you got to be kidding me.
You said enigma, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that was a bad joke of mine. Yes, well, yeah, and, well, anything you say about Obama, you know, a lot of his crowd and in the media, it's always framed as racism. You can criticize the policies, you're a racist.
Yeah, well, and that's all they've got. You know, I mean, that's really it's all they've got. It's all they've ever had. You know, because it's no secret for the last 100 years we've been trying the Keynesian experiment. We've been trying moving towards socialism. You know, decidedly so. I'd say since FDR. I'd say since Teddy Roosevelt was president. You know, we've been moving towards empire and socialism and everything else. And it's been 100 years, guys. It's not working.
Well,
you know, it was great while we were sitting on top of the world and we could pretend that, oh, you know, we were beating down the evil Soviets and standing up for the cause of liberty. But now the emperor has no clothes now. You know, the Soviets are no more, so therefore there's no Soviet evil empire. And here we are propping up dictators that are murdering populations around the world. We're out there killing people all around the world. And we're getting ready, in my opinion, I think we're getting ready to start killing people here.
Oh yeah, well, you know, and
I have a friend who's a Native American Indian, and he said to me, we were talking about this kind of stuff, and he said to me, he goes, you want to see what the future holds? He goes, look to the Indian reservations. He goes, that's the future. He goes, that's just been the experiment. That's the future for everybody.
You know, Superman would be very disappointed because his whole thing in his show was, you know, truth, justice, and the American way. What happened? Is it truth?
Yeah, there's none of that
work
anymore. There's none of that anymore.
Now, as far as Keynes, I have a possible theory. A lot of people don't know this, but that, you know, Keynes was a gay man. So maybe a lot of these of his followers have a committed gay relationship with his theories. But Keynes
could
was
be
a gay boy. He died in 1946, and he wasn't even that great of an economist, but, you know, they take his book as religion.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I've read, you know, like you, I've read, you know, Hayek and Mises and I've actually plowed through some Keynes, and even just reading the stuff when, you know, as it was when he wrote it, you kind of go, well, it's not like this wasn't tried by Bismarck in Germany. You know, I mean, this is nothing new. Bismarck did the same thing. He ordered the central bank to print money.
It reminds me of what Milton Friedman had said, and I parted company with him years ago when I discovered Austrian school, but Friedman's good on trade and, ethics of capitalism, that sort of thing. But he said, I love this, he said, capitalism is a success, socialism is a failure, therefore we need more socialism.
Yeah.
You know, he's making fun of the left and that crowd.
Yeah, and it's true, because that's like their mantra, you know? I mean, just keep doubling down on stupid, and I don't know, man, I think the whole thing is coming to a head in our lifetime.
Oh, that's right, but a lot of the politically connected businessmen, as it's been said before, I think I'm going to phrase this correctly, they want socialism for themselves and capitalism for everybody else. So they want to be connected to the government gravy train, but let the other people compete in the market.
Yes, yeah. And isn't it interesting that, you know, since the last election cycle back, and not this past one, the 2010, I'm talking the 2008 cycle, how many multi-gazillionaire socialists there are coming out of the woodwork? prescribing exactly what you just said, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, we need our corporate welfare and we need our tax breaks, but for you guys, that stuff is just evil and you don't know what to do with it anyway. So, you know, you just let us be, you know. I mean, millionaire socialist, isn't that an oxymoron?
Yeah. And on the left, we have a lot of rich socialists. Like Harry Reid and Pelosi, you know, the left crowd or the leftist
Democrat. We have a lot of rich socialist politicians that were piss poor when they first got elected to office.
Yeah.
Did you know, I found this out about 6 or 9 months ago, If you are a member of Congress, House or Senate, or a staffer for a member of Congress, House or Senate, it is legal for you to engage in insider trading.
Huh.
But the guy who tips you off could go to jail.
Well,
as soon as I heard that, I was just like, that makes a lot of sense there. That answers why how many of these guys go to Washington poor and they come out there multimillionaires.
I didn't know that. That's one of their methods. I understand it, insider trading shouldn't be illegal.
I don't think it should be either. I mean, it makes perfect sense. I mean, if you know someone who knows something, why wouldn't you want to profit from that? You know, it's not like you're hurting somebody.
Chad,
you
know, is it different than this? If I say to you, hey, Chad, there's a house over here that we can make it into a duplex and double our profit off it, and you know, everything's cool. Why don't we just do that? We're not going to tell the owner, but you know, we could, you know, the seller. But that's what we want to do. I mean, what's the big deal? Who have I cheated? Bothering anybody?
Right, right. Or if you said to me, hey, don't buy that duplex because they're going to knock down the lot next to it and they're going to put in a freeway.
Oh, I'm a criminal. That's insider information. Oh, no.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, it's everything's upside down.
Well, the SEC protects this established interest, doesn't it?
Oh, gosh, yeah. totally. I mean, look at the people that work there. Look at their backgrounds.
Only protected
Barry Madoff. JP Chase. I mean, they're all the usual. They're all from the usual suspects. It's a joke, is what it is. It's just a flat
awful.
Out joke.
You know, this crony capitalism. It's really, I don't know if it's running its course or it's still expanding. And of course, the military industrial complex. This crowd. They just can't get enough of our taxes.
No, they can't. They can't. And it's you know, I mean, it's good business. I mean, it makes contracts. And now you look at what was that thing that came out last year or somewhere around that time that was talking about the number of government contracts that have come about since 9/11. I mean, millions and millions of government contracts, all based on this war on terror, you know?
Quote-unquote private companies. Yeah, they might be private companies, but they're all gouging at the tax trough.
Yeah, private companies that would not be in existence were it not for 100% dependency on the federal government for revenue, you know?
Exactly. Now, as I steer us into your background, I want to get ahead of myself a little bit. Now, easy question to ask, maybe not as easy to answer, but knowing what you know now and what you've learned about politics and economics and the federal government, picture yourself as a enlisted man. Wouldn't you have a lot of soul searching, or if you knew now then what you know now, would you be really troubled?
I would be, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'll tell you what, you know, I mean, when I was in the military, it was 15 years ago. I got out 15 years ago, and I was proud to have been in. I was proud to have served, you know.
Yeah.
My eyes didn't really open until after the fact, of course, but, you know, as it stands right now, I would do everything I could to prevent my children from going in.
You're not the first vet I've heard say that.
You're just going to be sent off to get your limbs blown off and get maimed, wounded, or killed, so some other jack off can make money off of it. You know,
is what it comes down to. Yeah, because you're not, you know, sorry, America, but you know, I don't see it as you guys defending our rights. I see you as nowadays, especially, and for the last, I don't know, 40, 50 years, you know, defending a globalist empire.
That's exactly what it is. It's not supposed to exist
through the Constitution.
That's exactly right. We are an empire, and if you look at, and I'm sure, you know, I'm not the first one that said this to you, I'm sure, but you look at the parallels. Read the fall of Rome, and you look at the parallels of where we are now and what we're doing, and even the political discourse or lack thereof that we're having, and it's frightening. It's really frightening because I think we all know how that story ended, and anybody that thinks that it's going to be different this time around if we keep doing the same thing and making the same mistakes is just kidding themselves, burying their heads in the sand, and they're going to be awfully shocked when we all wake up one morning and we're living in a third world country.
Well, you're right, and I even look to a more recent example, and that's the collapse of the British Empire, because, for example, I know that they developed socialism at home in Britain, but, you know, World War I and World War II bankrupted that country big time.
Yes. Yes.
That really hastened their demise, and Churchill, who so sought to preserve the British Empire, he in my humble yet all-knowing opinion, he hastened its demise.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And today, of course, is D-Day, June 6th.
Mm-hmm.
So all these GIs, you know, they go ashore to fight the evil Germans who, you know, long story short, Hitler had railed against, you know, communism for you know, 20 years.
Right.
And so ends up our great ally, Stalin. And by the way, you know the Russians took and even the Brits took the brunt of World War II in Europe more than Americans ever did.
Absolutely, yeah. We were relatively insulated.
Yeah, you know, so our great ally, Churchill and FDR's ally, Stalin, who murdered 20 million people before World War II, is our ally against Hitler, long story short, I'm not saying he was not a nice guy, but long story short, he, you know, kept Europe from going full-blown communist.
Yeah, yeah.
And Germany was the only thing that stood between Russia and you know, Western Europe, because I just learned this about 6 years ago. I there's all this interesting stuff I never learned in history, that Russia was planning Stalin was planning a major invasion of Western Europe. I did not know that. That's why Germany struck first.
Yeah, he got short-circuited.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, we were on the wrong side. And I'm not talking about the Holocaust, because that came later, and there was different issues why all that came into being, and even the details of it. Although, if I spoke about it, I'd be called, my take on history, I'd be called a Holocaust denier. And I'm not advocating genocide or murder against anybody. I'm questioning the details and a lot of that, you know, what went on exactly. And for that, they want to shut me down. If I was in Europe, they want to throw me in jail. And I haven't advocated force or violence against anyone. That's the part that really irks me.
Well, that's we can't have freedom of speech and free expression of ideas now, can we?
No, and I'll grant you that I'm all for freedom of speech, but that doesn't give me the right to say we should attack Chad's home and kill him and his family. On a corner shouting something as stupid as that. I understand the difference, but I don't understand why they would crush freedom of inquiry, you know, criticism. Dissent that I find really despicable, and here you GIs, you guys were out there fighting for our rights, freedom of speech, and then you don't really even have it while you're serving.
No, you don't. You don't have it at all.
So you're probably familiar with Smedley Butler's War as a Racket.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I think every recruit should read that book.
I think, especially now. I mean, it's. Things have changed so dramatically, even in the 15 years since I left the service. I mean, not that it was a fantastic thing when I was there, you were still propagandized too. You were a tool and a pawn is what you were, and that's what you were used for. I mean, it's the way it's been, you know, since the Second World War, but certainly more so in recent years, but. I mean, you can't express yourself. You can't, which in some way I understand that. You know, it makes sense to maintain a certain degree of unit cohesion, so you can't have too much dissent.
Oh, I understand that.
And you can't get into the, you know, if you get into the crap, you can't really be, how should I say, insubordinate at certain times. But then again, you know, the military in a combat situation has its own way of dealing with incompetent officers and high-ranking officials, and we all know what that is, and
well,
those things happen. You know?
I'm even referring, Chad, even more so to before the clashes with
enemies start is that, and long story short, isn't it sad that like a lot of generals and even CIA, former CIA, they have to quit or resign or retire before they can speak their minds?
You know, and I think
so many guys die in the meantime.
The greatest betrayal that we have right now is really a betrayal of ethics and a betrayal of honor.
Exactly.
And that has to start at the top. And if we had general staff officers, you know, general officers that were worth a damn, worth the rank that they carry, beginning under George Bush, they would have been saying, no, sir, I'm not going to do that. And they would be tendering their resignations. And there would have been 20 or 30 generals coming in there just tendering their resignations because they're not going to prosecute unjust, illicit wars, knowing, you know, and especially knowing that once you get in there, they're not going to give you what you need to finish the war because they don't want the war to end. They want it to keep going so they can have their boogeyman, so they can scare the crap out of us at home and make us walk through naked body scanners and get former DHS secretaries very wealthy and play the game of the politically connected. You know, I mean, these guys, Petraeus and all of these generals, they knew damn well when we went into Afghanistan and certainly when we went into Iraq that they were going to have limited money, they were going to have limited troops, and they weren't going to be allowed to do what they needed to do to win a war. When, for example, maybe you have heard about this. It was a Marine Corps sniper who, I don't remember where I read it, but basically he was talking about how to take a shot, he had to get on his radio, contact his commanding officer, who then had to get on a satellite radio and get permission from a one-star general in Tampa at MacDill to get permission to take a shot.
Wow.
You can't win a war like that.
Right,
if you're
going
to go, if it's important enough to go to war, you go in there with overwhelming force, and you blow the hell out of the enemy, and you get out, and you're done. But then again, you think about the Soviets. You know, the Soviets were there for what, 11 years?
Yeah.
And they got their rear ends handed to them, and they weren't trying to win over hearts and minds and give money and help the Taliban grow their poppy seeds. I mean, they were vicious, absolutely vicious. 1 million men, 100,000 Spasnost special forces. And those guys are absolutely brutal.
Yeah.
And they got their asses handed to them, you know. And
it's not their terrain. They didn't grow up there. You know, the other crowd, they're willing to wait. You know, those people are willing to wait. To them.
Yeah, there are nomadic people and tribal people that are not going to be. They're just flat out. The Khans couldn't even conquer them, for crying out loud. You know,
right. And the British had trouble too. You know, so I knew all that. I thought it was ridiculous in the first place. Well, this year is 10 years in Afghanistan.
Yeah, and then they're talking about a withdrawal, but meanwhile we've got a what is that, Bagram Air Base over there? That's I don't even remember what the dimensions of it are, but it's insanely huge. We're not going anywhere.
I know. There's lots of
flying drones out. The CIA is going to be flying drones out of there forever.
It's awful. Well, anyway, back to your background. So you were a policeman first.
Yes.
And how many years were you a policeman?
I was all totaled on the job for 8.5 years.
Okay, and then you joined the military.
Yes.
Which most guys, you know, most of the cops are usually vets. They were in the military, but you sort of did it backwards, which I think is interesting.
Yeah.
Or you in reverse.
Yeah.
And then how long were you? Were you in the Army?
I was in the Army, yeah. I was an infantry.
For how many years?
For 2 years.
For 2 years. Okay.
Yes.
And then after you got out of the Army, is this when you became a lot more politically astute, or were you leaning that way, or were things...
I was politically astute.
What really brought you around?
I was politically astute. I was a student of politics and economics. All through high school, I was kind of a geek in that regard, and followed it all through high school, and you know, of course, in college. I mean, my major was in government, and I studied a lot of economics and foreign policy, that sort of thing, international relations, and. So when I went into the, and I had gotten my degree before I went into the Army, too. I did a lot of things backwards.
Oh, okay.
And so I went into the Army, and I was kind of you know, in a different category than a lot of the guys up there. I was older. I was 27 years old, and certainly one of the, you know, the there's actually one guy in my platoon who was older than I was, and, you know, the rest of them were kids, 18, 19, 20 years old, you know, and it sort of definitely shaped my my mindset, it mostly just by getting out of Massachusetts, you know. That was a big thing, because in Massachusetts, there's so much groupthink going on up in the Boston, Metro Boston area, that it's kind of an inside joke up there, that if you're there's two loops around the city. There's the 128 loop, it's the inner loop, and then the outer loop is the Interstate 495 loop that kind of goes from, you know, one end of the state to the other, South Shore to the North Shore.
Uh-huh.
And it basically, if you live outside of 495, west of Boston, west of 495, you might as well be in California or Hawaii, you know, and because everybody in Boston is just, it's Boston.
Well, it's a very liberal Democrat area.
They love Mike Dukakis. They're just, they, you know, have most of them just can't think for themselves. They have to be told what to do by the Boston Globe and the New York Times, you know. It's sad.
Well, you escaped.
It's true.
So then we're up to today, and of course it's been this way for several years, and I had mentioned it earlier, is that the, you know, and I got to tell you, I don't like cops. I mean, I'm really down on cops. Cops of today are militarized. They're not like they used to be. They're, you know, very impatient. YouTube is full of police brutality clips.
It's
what
very,
is happening,
very different.
Chad?
It's, I don't know, you know. I mean, I think what I think is happening is how the federal government has placed over the years so many spending mandates on the states, whether it's education or whether it's, you know, through Medicare, all these, you know, all these other things that the federal government says, well, you got to pay money for this. So the state's got to add this to their budget. Then they're short on essential services like, I mean, you know, police, fire, EMS, these things are kind
sure.
of essential. And but they're going to have to lay off firefighters. They're going to have to lay off EMS. They're going to have to lay off cops. So the feds come into the rescue. Here's a bunch of money to hire 20 new cops or 30 new cops and 20 new firemen, but here's how you're going to train them. And I think that's the caveat. Here is how you're going to train them. And this is what you're going to do. Oh, and by the way, we're going to give you money. I mean, do you know how many police departments, but when I was a cop, okay, and I started on the job in 1988, okay, the only people that had a SWAT team in my area would have been Boston,
right,
Worcester, Springfield, big cities, they had a SWAT team. Your counties, they didn't have a SWAT team, you know.
Uh-huh.
You would have, in the smaller towns, you would have a consortium of officers that would work together, would be sworn in each other's jurisdiction so we could roll through and back each other up and help each other out on the thin shifts and stuff like that. But it was not militarized. We had absolutely no contact with the federal government whatsoever. You know, much less receive any money from them.
Yeah.
And now, I mean, if you go out to East BF, Kansas, if the department's got 100 guys on it, guaranteed they got a SWAT team. Guaranteed.
Yeah. Wow.
Plus they got an APC, you know. Regional, the county at least is going to have a helicopter.
Wait, APC,
you know what I'm saying?
Person,
and it just builds up. And they, you know, and you, yeah, and you're gonna get this stuff. The feds are going to give you this stuff. Well, you have to train on it to become proficient. And, boy, you better start using it to show that we're putting it to good use, or we won't give you any more money. So then you couple that with the war on drugs, and they're looking for this and they're looking for that, and next thing you know, I mean, people are getting their doors knocked down all the time and getting ripped out of their cars. And
they just killed one of your vet brothers.
That's exactly it.
In Arizona, they just killed one of your vet brothers out there, a former Marine.
Yeah. Yeah.
Botched drug raid, wrong address.
Yeah. It's
imagine
insane.
That.
And
I mean,
have a
it's sickening.
I have a brother-in-law who's a cop, and a very good, honest cop, I have to say. I mean, a good guy. I trust him completely. He's a very good friend. I can talk to him like I'm talking to you, you know. And he won't go running to report me to Janet Napolitano. And he was involved in intelligence in his department for a while, and you know, these raids, as squared away as you are, one, there's a certain percentage of time that you're going to hit the wrong house at the wrong time. And it happened to him. And this guy is a guy who crosses his T's and dots his I's every single time. And he was horrified. I mean, he had a he was really shaken up by the fact that somewhere there was a mistake made and he couldn't catch it. You know?
Wow.
And these things happen, but when you go in there with your finger on the trigger, and especially like you said, nowadays it's all these guys that are veterans that are going into the police forces. Where are these guys coming back as veterans from? They're coming back from combat zones, so they're hot on the triggers. And they get you go crashing through a door. What's the first thing they're going to do is start shooting? You know, that's what they're going to do.
And there's children here in these. I mean, there were children in Iraq and Afghanistan too, but. You know,
yeah, exactly.
There's Americans here with children. You have children, you know, and just to barge in somewhere like that because somebody had a pound of powder, this and that, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah, well, you think about the neighbors, too. I mean, if you're talking about firing M4s or M16s or AR-15s, you know, whether it's a .223 caliber or a 5.56, it doesn't matter because the velocity of that thing is going to go through a wall. You know, I don't care if you're shooting at cinder block. I don't care if you're shooting at, you know, certainly drywall, but... You know what it's like, you know. I mean, your houses are stacked up on one on top of another, no matter what city you're living in these days. You do that stuff in an urban area, you're absolutely going to have bullets flying through the neighbors' houses. And apparently from that Yuma, Arizona, where that happened?
Somewhere like that. They put 61
I know that they went into the neighboring houses, too.
Yeah.
Trying to cover up the evidence of the bullet holes and stuff.
And, of course, you know, they're always, oh, we're sorry it happened, wrong, we're apologetic, you know, collateral damage is that same excuse. And then they put the cop on, you know, administrative leave, which just means paid vacation.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Or
and they usually get off.
Until this whole thing blows over, then we'll put them on the desk for a couple of days and,
yeah.
And then put them back out on patrol. I mean, you look at our city out here. I mean, all the incidents that we have out here. That, you know, thanks to Cop Watch, are really starting to come to fruition, and people are starting to wake up all over this area to realize what they're dealing with, you know, and it's just sick. I mean, these guys, there's always been a thin blue line, and cops protect their own because, you know, it's, you know, to speak the truth, you know, it's a tough job. You work some crappy hours. It's everybody has always hated cops, you know, and especially, and you know, like, you know, when I was working midnights, and you're not dealing with nice people when you're working on midnights,
right.
90%
of the
time, you know.
But the drug war complicated your service, your work.
Yeah, the drug war and the whole, like you said, the whole federalization paramilitarization of the police has done that, too. And now you've got this whole attitude of, I mean, before, even when I was on the job, there was an us versus them sort of attitude that was out there. But it was more of a, it wasn't an aggressive attitude. I think that's the best way I can put it. It wasn't like we got to go out there and mess with people. We got to go out there and stir crap up just for the sake of screwing with people. Yeah, of course you had some guys that would do that, but they were jerks. You're going to have jerks no matter what profession you're in. You know, you're going to have guys that are going to abuse their authority, abuse their power. And for the most part, you know, those guys were just kind of like, whatever, man, you go do your thing. Just, you know, if you get yourself in the shit, too bad for you, you know.
Yeah.
But,
I read recently.
Most of us didn't do that sort of thing, you know, and but now that's what they do, and a lot of it, I mean, too, is raising revenue. You stop a lot of cars, write a lot of tickets, write revenue, and if they find drugs in your car, you know, and they can get it, you know, maybe they can confiscate the car and sell it.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, it's.
I read.
It's upside down.
Recently, in South Florida, I think it was in South Beach, is that the cops.
They gunned a guy down.
Shooting somebody, I thought somebody might have had a gun or something. But anyway, there was, you know, standard buyers were filming it. And cops hate that now. And they slammed this guy down, took his phone, stomped on his phone. But the kid was able to take the thing,
get the chip and stick it in his mouth. I saw that.
Yeah. So, you know, the cops, see, they want to be able to film us. You know, they got their cameras or get us. But now they don't like it done to them.
No, they don't. And you know, and the funny thing is... You know, I've talked to some of the guys involved in Cop Watch around here, and they've said, you know, that there are definitely, you know, guys out there that absolutely have no problem with us doing it. You know, we tell them who we are and what we're doing, and we start taping them, and they're like, no problem, you know, have a good night. You know, they don't care because these guys have nothing to worry about because they're doing the job the way it's supposed to be done. If somebody asks them for help, they help them. If a crime is committed, they deal with it. They don't go out there trying to stir stuff up or beat on people or just, you know, show their power. But it's these guys that are, you know, all, whether they're all pumped up on steroids or just too aggressive from their military training or whatever it is, they just got an attitude problem. And, you know, I am the law, screw you. You know, I'm going to do whatever the hell I want, and my department's going to take care of me because I'm the law. I can
right.
do what I want, and I can get away with it. And the problem is that they do get away with it. Because you've got just, you know, numerically, by the numbers, you've got way more good, honest cops out there than you do bad ones. The problem uh-huh. is, with that thin blue line, if you speak out against the bad ones, especially like, say, in our department, our metropolitan department here, where it's very obvious that you have a corrupt, at the very least, an inept leadership, probably a corrupt leadership of senior officers, you know, all the way down the food chain, getting into the, you know, captains and lieutenants.
Right.
Retribution, if you try to start ratting people out, is going to be pretty swift, and it's going to be pretty damn severe for these guys. So, I mean, there's some fear, and I think maybe through, you know, maybe reaching out through organizations like Cop Watch and stuff like that, if we can get some of these good guys to understand that, hey, we'll support you. You guys that are out there doing the right thing, putting it on the line to actually do the job that you're sworn to do, protect our liberty, not violate it, but protect it from people that are trying to, you know, perpetrate criminal acts against us. You know, for honest cops that are not out there enforcing stupid laws like feeding the homeless and things like that,
yeah.
You know.
Can you believe that?
Those guys, I want to work with those guys. I want to help those guys. I want to see those guys in charge.
Yeah.
You know, but retribution for them for ratting out the bad guys is pretty severe. I mean, I remember when I was on the job, we had a couple of guys that were just terrible. I mean, they were if they weren't cops, they'd be in jail. You know,
yeah.
absolutely no doubt about it. And every time you tried to do something about it, you know, with the upper management, you got the smackdown.
Well,
basically, leave it alone.
Aren't
you know?
A member of the Oath Keepers?
Yes, I am.
Thank goodness. I hope their numbers are growing.
They've grown exponentially. I joined it was a little over a year ago, year and a half ago, shortly after it started, and
you
I was at number 550 on my membership card. And now I think the last time I checked, it's been a while. Last time I checked, I think they were over 18,000.
Wow. Well, there should be a lot more. You know, I was really disgusted to see National Guard. This really pissed me off, and I wonder how law-abiding vets feel about this. During Katrina, they were disarming citizens in New Orleans. I ain't talking about thugs on the street or criminals. I'm talking about
really scary
homes.
Yeah, what was
did
really
you know
scary,
that?
I remember seeing one video, YouTube video where the guy said he was being interviewed by the news, and he said, you know, well, I'm just afraid of what I might have to do. And the reporter says, you mean kill an American? And he goes, yes, sir. Thinking, well, good luck to you, buddy, because I'll tell you this. At my church, I know there's a lot of retired military guys. I know one guy who is a retired colonel, Marine Corps colonel, older gentleman. He had fought in Korea, Vietnam.
Yeah.
And he said, he goes, you know, there's a day that's going to possibly be coming. And he said, you know, if you see soldiers or Marines or what have you coming down the street in Humvees, with 50 caliber machine guns sticking out of them, and they're all dressed in battle gear, guess what? They're not coming to help you.
Yeah.
They're coming to oppress you. They're traitors to the oath that they've sworn, and you treat them as such.
Yeah, he's right. Well, you saw what
he's,
they did to Western Illinois
right.
University, didn't you, a couple months ago?
What's that?
Did you see what they did to Western Illinois University?
No.
There was an annual students' party on this one area, this, you know, neighborhood. Did you see all the riot police they sent out there? There weren't any riots. There wasn't. They just descended on these kids. Pepper sprayed them. They were beating them. They came across the line with their black, you know, outfits and their black helmets.
Beating the shield and all that crap.
And when they were hitting kids too, yeah, they were just. I mean, I'm a college landlord and I know what college kids do. But this was. They were out partying. They weren't burning cars or turning stuff over. They were partying. It's like a neighborhood kind of a. You know, one of those sleepy college towns, pretty good sized town, but nice, you know, street with trees and, you know, some of the older homes, you know, all college. And there's a row of these damn cops coming through there all dressed in battle gear. You know, the black. You didn't see that.
No, I didn't. I'm gonna have to look.
Oh
that
man,
up.
I don't know if it's.
I want to see that.
I think
that's
it's Western Illinois University. It was awful. They just descended on this annual. You know, kids were out there drinking.
Yeah.
But again, they weren't. You know, wrecking anything. They were partying.
Right, right.
Now, when there's been trouble like that in other college towns, you know, local police come down and break it up. But there wasn't. The thing is, there wasn't trouble there. And there must have been. It looked like there was 30, maybe to 50 of these bastards in their black outfits. And they were marching, you know, arm to arm, shoulder to shoulder against these kids. The kids were like shocked, like, what are they here for? They couldn't believe it.
I wonder if that's a continuation of what they were, you know, what they started really doing at the G20 down in Pittsburgh last year.
It looked like that
2 years ago. You know, I mean, where because these things seem to be happening. You know, they seem to be random, but I'm sure they're not random because, you know, we all know that DHS and the NSA and those goons are all.
Man.
Behind this coordinated effort, you know, and I think they're, I mean, like all these military exercises where they have these anti-terror urban drills and the army comes in and the Marines come in and everybody cheers them on. They just did one
in Miami.
Locally. Yeah, they did one down in Kissimmee too, and everybody's out there waving their flags. Oh, let's support the troops. This is great. They're training for terror. Well, then has it ever occurred to some of these people that maybe they're not maybe the reason that they're doing these things is not to get these guys used to combat in an urban environment, but to get you, Joe Citizen, used to seeing combat troops on your corner.
Exactly.
As they oppress you and jackboot you, you know? I mean, because these guys, I mean, I've been in the Army. And I guarantee you now, you know, just considering the type of combat that we're engaged in, I guarantee you every major training facility in the U.S. Army and Marine Corps has urban warfare centers set up.
Oh, yeah.
So they don't need to be going through Kissimmee or Miami or L.A. or Boston or anywhere. You know, they've got everything they need to shoot them up, you know, and play the war games realistically on post. That's all for our benefit, I think.
Yeah.
Which
well,
is scary
that's the thing.
In itself.
If we're an armed citizenry, like you were talking about that retired Marine Corps fella, I mean, what do we do if it comes to when just regular law-abiding people are under, you know, how do we fight back? Because they've got better guns than we do. You know, what do we do?
One of the things I have to say, and I think it's as crazy, I mean, it's crazy. I mean, we're in crazy town anyway at this point, you know, in this country. But one of the things that would actually be in our favor is the fact that we're an extended empire at war. You know, because when it hits the fan, I think it's going to be not at a time of their choosing. I think there's going to be a collapse, and it's going to happen so quickly that they're not going to have time to do anything about it. And they're going to have troops and stuff overextended. So what they're going to have to deal with, you know, civil unrest here, or, you know, just flat out, you know, say maybe going to an extreme and declaring martial law. I mean, I know, for example, I know quite a few cops locally that are good guys, that are like, you know, that think for the most part like us, and the friends that I have talked to have said that if it ever comes to that, they're leaving their car at the station and they're going home to protect their family, and anybody that tries to come through that door is going to get some, you know,
lead. Yeah, we'll
copper jacketed lead flavor.
It you know, it's a shame we even have to have this conversation about our own country. It's come to that.
It's horrible. I mean, I would never have thought. Even 10 years ago, I would never have thought that I would be thinking in the mode that I'm thinking, you know, because it's a very real possibility. I hope I'm wrong. I hope we're all wrong.
I hope you are too. But I'm glad that you've, you know, I thank you for your service, of course, and your, you know, support of our country and your patriotism. But even more than that, I really appreciate the fact that you've come past that and you see even a broader thing about what's going on, and you could write a great book of your just experiences and your take on things. But you know, we need more people like you, especially vets. That's why I like to talk to vets, especially. I hope to speak to one. I hope next week, who is connected with the I think a Florida or somewhere chapter of Iraqi Vets Against the War.
That would be very good. That would be very interesting to speak to those guys, because they're growing in numbers. Nobody in the press wants to talk about them, but their numbers are. No, notice how those guys were all over the news until Obama was elected. You know, they were all over NBC, CBS, CNN, MSNBC, and now they're nowhere.
Isn't
nobody wants to talk to them anymore.
Obama gets a pass, continuing just the Bush policies, he gets a pass.
How is that? I just don't even, I can't even wrap my mind around it. It's just so shallow and it's so obvious, and I just don't get, you know, these, it's so frustrating, as I'm sure you know. You try to talk to people, and you kind of go through the period of trying to help other people to wake up, and you kind of gently prod them along, and you give them a little food for thought, because, you know, you can't just shake people awake, because it's too much, you know. I mean, people have to come to the point to where, you know, we're at, where it's like you have to look at everything you've ever been taught or told and just accept the fact that you've been lied to your entire life, and you've got to unlearn and relearn everything.
Isn't that something?
You know? It's crazy. It's absolutely insane.
So much I learned in history is lacking a lot of important details.
Yeah, well, I mean, look at simple things like the Civil War, you know? The Civil War. Oh, the South, they wanted to secede because they hated black people and they wanted to have slaves, and Abraham Lincoln was this hero because he had the vision to keep the Union together. How did he keep the Union together? Oh, he locked up everybody in the northern states that had anything bad to say about going to war. Anybody who said, let's just let them go. The hell with them. If they want to do their thing, just let them do their thing. Oh, next thing you know, you get a one trip to jail. Government goons show up and pick you up and bring you to a prison, and they lock you up in prison. You know, Lincoln's Guantanamos, you know. They torture you, beat you, keep you in prison until the war was over. He inflated the money. He destroyed the dollar, killed 1 million Americans.
Yeah.
You know? Not that slavery was something worth protecting, but up until shortly before the bullets started flying, old Abe didn't have too much of a problem with slavery.
Not at all.
But
and,
we were
know,
never taught
other
that in school.
Every other slave-owning country, European-type country, got rid of slavery without civil war and all the massive deaths.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. It's like, you know, I remember always being taught that the Civil War was all about slavery, when in fact it had very little to do with slavery. It had everything to do with economics.
And taxes, that's true. Well, listen, Chad, it's time for me to wind down here, but I really, I'm glad you came on. We almost kind of like just scratched the surface of your wisdom and experience. Well, so I hope I can get you to come back again soon.
Anytime. I've been more than happy. I'm honored to do it. I'm honored to have had
thank you. I am too, and I like to learn, and I know we're on the same page. As you know, I haven't clashed with anybody yet. That's what I'm looking forward to, actually. But until that day comes, I'm just going to stay on the same page and go down the path of liberty, property, and peace. So I'm going to say goodbye now. And thanks again, Chad. Keep up the struggle. Fight the power, my man.
I will, my brother. Take care.
Okay. To everybody else out there, thanks again for tuning in to the Third Stream View. I forgot to say hi to my friend Jed and Cheryl, if you're out there. Charlene, if you're out there. So until next week, same time, same place, this is PK saying good night from Third Stream View. Take care, everyone.